Who are you going to call, right? My name's Roger Olson. I am a recovering compulsive gambler. By the grace of God, rooms like this, people like yourselves, and the Gamblers Anonymous program. I have not placed a bet since March 4th, 1995. I did not place a bet today. And so I'm here today to, first of all, share my story with you. I am originally from Southern California and grew up in a little town called San Gabriel. I never gambled before in my life at all, with the exception of a raffle ticket that I bought in my senior year of high school and won a car. But before that, I'd never gambled before in my life. And one year, I took my wife and my three small children to a little town called Laughlin, Nevada, where I saw that they had inexpensive rooms and inexpensive meals, and there was also a casino there. Well, I didn't know that. You know, I'd never been inside a casino before. And so while I was there, I took my wife into the casino, and we dabbled around a little bit, and I ended up winning more money at that first venue, at that first time. I ended up winning more money than before we had left the house for the vacation. And I thought, wow, how can these places stay in business? And so from that point on, every time the wife and kids went on a vacation, we went to some place that had gambling. But then I began to use that activity as an escape venue, as a way to get away and not have to face the problems that I had going on in my life. And at that time, I was pastoring a small church in Southern California. I was also working two other jobs. And, you know, I had a pretty big chip on my shoulder. I thought, well, why do all these other preachers that work in big churches and they drive nice cars and they have all these things, and I don't have any of that? And so I would go to gamble, and my wife and kids never knew at all what I was doing. And I would go there, and it was just to escape, you know? It was like going to my own adult version of Disneyland. I could walk in, put my problems on the shelf. The church ladies couldn't track me down, you know? Preacher, yeah, Janet here is an ex-Methodist pastor. You know, preacher, you know, that sermon was about 2 minutes too long last time, and we sure wish you'd stop preaching on the evils of alcohol, you know? It's just kind of getting to us. I didn't have to worry about the fact that I was working three jobs. I didn't have to worry about the fact that I wasn't making my monthly budget or the fact that I had a huge mortgage payment. And then all of a sudden, one day, 3 years later, I wake up and I'm bankrupt in every area of my life. Emotionally, financially, spiritually. I'd lost everything because of my gambling. And I was known then in the community as that pastor that threw his wife and kids under the bus because of his gambling addiction. My wife divorced me. My three children didn't want to have anything to do with me. I was living out of my car, and my pastor and mentor at the time, Dr. John Eichhorn, called me on the phone, and he said, Roger, we never know why things happen the way they happen, but you have gone through this for a reason. And Doc was near 80 years old at that point. He passed away a short time after that, and I've never forgotten those words. And then here I am today. I have 21 years of sobriety. I have a new wife here, Kim. And so right now, I wear many hats, okay? I am the Resource Development Coordinator for the Alabama Council on Compulsive Gambling. I'm a master's level therapist. I'm also the pastor of a small church in Wetumpka, Alabama, Cedarwood Community Church, where I pastor. And I'm also the facilitator for two GA meetings in the area. I'm a former trustee with Gamblers Anonymous. So I wear a lot of hats. I do a lot of things. But I want to talk to you for just a moment about the hat I wear as a pastor, okay? And I'm reminded of the story of the clergyman who was walking through Skid Row one day, and he saw a man sitting in a cardboard box and he was moved with compassion, and so he pulled out a $20 bill, and he walked up and he gave it to the homeless man, and he whispered in his ear, "Never despair." Well, about a week later, that same pastor just happened to be walking through that same part of town, and all of a sudden, he heard from behind him a man yelling, "Preacher! Preacher!" waving his hand with some money. He came running up to him. He put $60 in his hand, and the pastor looked down and he said, "Well, I don't quite understand." He says, "No, preacher, you was right. Never Despair came in first place at the fourth race at Santa Anita, and the odds were 6-1. Now, see, that's clean enough that you can tell in the pulpit on Sunday. But it just goes to show us how prevalent gambling is. The gambling is all around us. And so someone said to me one day, "Never despair," and they got me into Gamblers Anonymous, which, for you clinicians that are here with us, it's a 12-step program for people who have a gambling problem. Of course, I had to meet the rights to attend this fine organization, and the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop gambling. That's the only reason you need for going into the Gamblers Anonymous program, is to have a desire to stop gambling. And believe me, when I went into Gamblers Anonymous, I don't think I could personally get any lower than I'd already got, okay? And I came in and I said, "Whatever you guys have, I want to get a part of." And I was there because my counselor insisted on me to attend GA meetings. I went to counseling. My counselor was not what we would call a certified gambling counselor. In fact, he was a marriage and family therapist who was actually going through his internship there at the counseling facility that I went to. But he had enough wisdom to say, "You need to get to Gamblers Anonymous." He also warned me that if I tried to do a little song and dance with the people in Gamblers Anonymous, like I was doing during the counseling sessions, that they would eat me alive. Because he said, "You will not be able to pull the wool over their eyes like you're trying to pull the wool over me." Because when I went in for counseling, well, yeah, I had hit rock bottom, but I didn't really have a problem. I just made some bad choices, and I just needed to get through this. And so I found 12 steps that helped lead me to recovery. I went in, and the first thing I had to do was I had to admit that I was powerless over gambling and that my life had become unmanageable. I had to tell my higher power, "You need to take the wheel. You need to get in the driver's seat. You need to start driving me around, because I can't do this for myself." Because every area of my life had literally become unmanageable because of my gambling addiction. And the one thing I will remember about the first meeting was the fact that when I walked in, I was extended a handshake, I was given a yellow book, the Gamblers Anonymous combo book. I was introduced to a group of people that were all very sympathetic to what I had gone through, and nobody judged me, and nobody ridiculed me. They all listened. Of course, I was ignorant enough and naive enough that when I went home from that first meeting, I told my first wife, who since divorced me, I said, "Oh, sweetheart, listen, let me tell you something. We're not as near in bad shape as some of the people that I heard give therapy. Boy, I just couldn't believe some of the things that I heard." And my first wife looked at me and said, "Are you crazy? We've lost our house. Our house has been foreclosed on. We're living in a two-bedroom rental. I've got my oldest son in high school in one bedroom. I've got my two younger children in another bedroom. And you and I are sleeping on the floor in the living room because there isn't a third bedroom. And you have the nerve to come in here and say, oh, I listened to some of the stories of some of the other people. You know, and what I've learned through the program is, if I had had the resources that those other people had, I'd have been right there where they were. I would have gambled away it all, you know. When I hear somebody at a meeting say they went through $2 million, oh, well, I only spent, you know, X amount of money. And we don't usually mention amounts of money in the program because it's not really that important. It's just all relevant to you and your situation. But if I'd have had access to $2 million, I guarantee you I would have spent $2 million. If Ed McMahon and Dick Clark had showed up at my front door, you know, and said, congratulations, I'd have said, oh, I know where this money's going immediately. My second step was that I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to a normal way of thinking and living. You know, I really like that word normal. I asked, what does that word normal actually mean? Because what's normal to me may not be normal to you. It may be something totally different. But after a series of days, and then weeks, and then months, and then years, I came to believe it's a daily process, ladies and gentlemen, that as you go through the program, you realize that there is something greater than yourself that can lead you to a normal way of thinking and living. I went to the Gamblers Anonymous meeting this morning here at the hotel. I heard a comment that I'd never heard before, and I said, wow, thank you to my higher power that I could hear that illustration, because I had never heard it before. And I said, that's just one more illustration now that I can put into my toolbox when I'm sharing at other meetings. And then number three, I made a decision on my own to turn my will and my life over to the care of this power of my own understanding. And I don't like to do that, because I'm always right, I'm never wrong, okay? Don't tell me what I have to do. But I made the decision, you know, higher power, it's all yours. I can't do it. I can't do it on my own. Now, this is the point where a lot of people in the Gamblers Anonymous program put the brakes on. They say, okay, 1, 2, 3, I got it, you know. I'm powerless over gambling, came to believe, made a decision to turn my will and my life over, because then when I got to the fourth step, I had to make a searching and fearless moral and financial inventory of myself. Ooh, I don't like that. Remember on I Love Lucy when Ricky would catch Lucy in a lie or something, and she'd make that face and she'd go, ooh, you know. This is the point in the program where a lot of people who have been enrolled into Gamblers Anonymous, they put the heels on. They don't want to do the fourth step. Mm-mm, no. I don't want to have to open that closet. I don't want to have to go under the sink and open the garbage bag that has all my dirty dishes, and then what do I got to do? I got to start taking them out one at a time and cleaning them. And let me tell you something, folks. When you open my bag, it stinks. It has a stench that is indescribable, because there is all the junk and the garbage and the character defects and the horrible things about my life that led me to where I was at that time. And so I had to open, and I had to take a piece of paper. And now, some of the dishes weren't in such bad shape, okay? But it is such a mind-opening thing. And we talk about in motivational interviewing, you know, removing that ambivalence. Let me tell you something. I could not believe how problem gambling had taken me from a pastor, a man who was a pillar in the community, a man that was respected by all, a man who was trusted by all. And it turned me into one of the biggest lowlifes of the community, a lie, a cheat, and a steal. all because I had to get to the casino and escape to my own private Disneyland. And then on top of that, I had to sit down and I had to admit to someone else, both to myself and another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs. You know, can you look at forward to something like that? Hey, let me sit you down and tell you what a terrible person I am and all the terrible things that I've done. But I found people in the Gamblers Anonymous program who were very concerned about me someday getting back into the pulpit, and those were the people that I was able to sit down and say, these are the things that I've done, and these are the things that I was doing before I even started gambling that just kind of led the way for me to get into the problems that I got into. Well, then I had to work the sixth step, which was I was entirely ready to have these defects of character removed. Okay, I've gone under the sink, I've taken out the garbage bag, I've opened it up, there's all these dirty dishes. What's it going to take to clean these dishes? What's it going to take to clean up my life so that I can begin to go forward once again with my life? And so I was ready. Whatever it was going to take, I was ready to say, let's get this act cleaned up. Let's go forward. And so the seventh step was, I very humbly asked God of my own understanding to remove all of my shortcomings. Lord, I'm going to give it all to you. Higher power, I'm going to give it all to you. You know, and you know, where I come from in the Bible Belt of Alabama, you know, there's a saying that whom the Lord loveth, he chastiseth. Of course, when I was gambling in California, I could stand in the pulpit, and again, I hope I'm making some references here that I'm not offending anyone, okay? Is that all right? Did we, you know, if you're with me so far, say, uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
All right, there we go. All right. As my 30-year-old daughter says, Daddy, you got to keep it real and you got to keep it 100. So I could stand in the pulpit on Sunday mornings in California, and I could put my finger at my flock and say, you know, it says in the book of Deuteronomy, you can be sure your sin will seek you out. But then my little gambling addict right over here on my shoulder would say, but that's okay, preacher. We got yours under control. Nobody's ever going to know. Okay, good. Because their sin's going to get exposed, but mine is not. And so I had to ask God, all those shortcomings, all those things that I've done, I want you to help me remove them. Well, I continued on with my recovery program. Somebody told me, well, now you need to make amends with the people that you harmed. And I may be wrong, okay? But as far as I know, Gamblers Anonymous is the only program that prescribes to you that you have to go and you have to make good the things that you've done wrong. Because for a gambling addict, the drug of choice is money. And as long as someone is willing to pay, the gambler, the problem gambler, is willing to play. And so, you know, if you're an alcoholic, your drug of choice is alcohol. If you're a meth addict, your drug of choice is meth. If you're a gambling addict, your drug of choice is money. It's what you need. And let me just say this, that as a gambling addict, I could come up with some of the most bizarre, but yet at the same time, believable stories on the face of the planet. And ladies and gentlemen, who's not going to trust a pastor? Brother Joe, can you help me? Because my wife is facing an impending brain surgery operation. I need a couple $1,000. Well, sure, preacher. We'll help you in a moment. They wouldn't ask. They wouldn't question. Okay. So I had to make a list of all the people that I had harmed and then say, I'm willing to make amends to them all. And let me just say this. I got over 21 years clean time. But ladies and gentlemen, there are still people there are still people that I need to make amends to, and there's also people that, because they've either passed away or because I've moved away, I'll never be able to make amends to them. And I'm reminded of that each and every day when I look myself in the mirror. Of course, that person that I had to look in the mirror, okay, all right, therapist, as far as your clients go, all right, sometimes the person, okay, I keep getting noises, but I don't know what they mean, but sometimes the person that is the most difficult to forgive is the person that you see in the mirror every single day. And I had to put that person on the list. And I had to say to that person, I'm going to make amends to you too. And I'm going to forgive you for what you have done. Number nine, the ninth step said to make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Sometimes in the GA program, we understand that you know, maybe somebody helped us out, and if we go back to pay them back, and their spouse finds out that they loaned us money, that's going to create a problem. So sometimes there are times when we don't make amends because we realize that we're going to cause two or three more problems. The tenth step, I continue to take that personal inventory. You know, Gamblers Anonymous publishes a real nice inventory sheet, and I continue to take personal inventory. And when I was wrong, I promptly admitted it. But you see, I had a new tool in my toolbox. I'm glad for this tool also. I had a new tool in my toolbox, and that was my meetings. And my meetings were made up of people that were all problem gamblers going through the same thing at different places in their recovery. So I could go in and I could say before all of them, you know, I lied to that person, or I cheated that person, or I did something wrong and I shouldn't have. And I just need to get it out there. You know, I've learned now with my second wife that if I do something that I know I shouldn't have done, or if I say something in a very unkind manner, I immediately try to tell her, I'm sorry, dear, I shouldn't have said that. See, I don't want to let any more dirty dishes get into that garbage bag under the sink. I want to keep them all clean so that can't act as a trigger for me to get out there and gamble, you know, because arguments and frustrations are one of the questions that we ask ourselves. The 11th step, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. You know, I got into my prayer closet and I said, okay, higher power, if you'll just get me out of this mess. I got into that bargaining situation, right? I said, if you'll just get me out of this mess, then somehow I'll make it up to you. I promise. And I continued to go into my prayer closet from time to time and just talk to God and let him talk to me. Now, excuse me just a minute. I want to check my time to make sure. Okay, all right. I'm right where I want to be. We go till 3:30, correct?
3:15.
Thank you. All right. Last step was having made an effort to practice these principles in all our affairs, tried to carry this message to other compulsive gamblers. Thank you, everyone, this afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to work my 12th step. So the power in the program lies in the therapy that is showed or shared during the meetings. I got so much out of the meeting this morning. 8 o'clock, you know, you show me folks that have an 8 o'clock meeting, you know, at a conference, and I'll show you a group of people that are dedicated to their recovery. So we ask, what's the first thing a compulsive gambler ought to do in order to stop gambling? Well, the first thing is come to meetings, okay? But the first thing is to make a list, checking it twice, you know, decide what they're going to do in order to stop gambling. They're going to come up with a plan and they're going to stick to that plan. And if I join Gamblers Anonymous, won't everybody know that I'm a compulsive gambler? No, because anonymity is the spiritual foundation of the program. And so if your client says to you, well, I'm a little concerned about going to that GA meeting because somebody may see me that knows me, or somebody may go out and say, hey, guess who I saw at the meeting, okay? But, you know, whom you see at the meeting, what you hear at the meeting, it stays in the meeting. And how does someone stop gambling through the Gamblers Anonymous program? Well, again, it's by following those 12 steps. It's by going to the meetings, because the meetings make it. And the question comes up every once in a while. Can a person recover by himself or herself by just simply reading the Gamblers Anonymous literature or medical books on the problem of compulsive gambling? Well, no, it doesn't work that way. It's not like, here, you take this pill and you won't gamble again, okay? You know, they can give alcoholics a certain chemical that's going to make them get sick every time they get around alcohol, okay? They don't have that in Gamblers Anonymous. The power in the meetings is what makes the program work. I also had a pressure relief group meeting. When my wife saw Mark Lefowitz the other day, she said, Roger, that guy looks familiar to me. Have I seen him before? And I said, yeah, over 20 years ago when he had a baseball cap in Santa Ana and he was running a baseball card shop. I said, it was his shop where Bob W. did his pressure relief group meeting with us. And she said, oh, wow, okay, that's where I know him from. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you who are clinicians, your client has twice the chance of staying in recovery if your client will not only come to you for counseling, but also attend Gamblers Anonymous meetings, or any support meeting for that matter, because we're not the only way on the face of the earth to get people to recovery. If you just go to Gamblers Anonymous meetings, well, okay, you got a chance of staying in recovery. If you just go to counseling, well then, yeah, you have a chance of staying in recovery. But if you do both, you have twice the chance. And so what I encourage all of you to do is to seek out in your communities people that are involved with the Gamblers Anonymous program. Find out where the open meetings are that you might be able to attend. Get a chance to know some of these people. Let them know, hey, I'm going to be sending some of my clients to you from time to time. Might even send them with a sheet of paper to have you sign off on it. And try to nurture that relationship, which is so important, between the counseling field and the Gamblers Anonymous field. Because there are things that the counselors can do that GA can't do, and there's things that GA can do that the counselor can't do. You know, when you're having a pressure relief group meeting and somebody from GA says, well, let me call that loan shark and explain to him that you're going to have to get that set up on a payment plan. Can you see a therapist doing that in his office? Sure, let me just call your loan shark. I'll take care of that right now. The client now has a brand new family that the client has been welcomed into. You want to know why there's people in JA that have 20 years, 25, 30, 35 years, 40 years in the program? It's because when they were a problem gambler, they were isolated, they were alone. The emptiness of your heart for a problem gambler is the essence of your addiction. They get into Gamblers Anonymous and they get a brand new family that they can relate to. And again, they get a sponsor, they get someone to relate to. It gives them a big brother or big sister in the program. But what about the family member who wakes up one day and finds that their entire world is completely destroyed around them? Well, for that person, there's gambling on it. This time, I want to introduce to you my wife of 39 years. And if you haven't guessed it by now, my first wife is also my second wife. So I'm going to ask her to come up and speak for just a moment.
Having me here today. Imagine that you're a 35-year-old wife and a mother of three children, and then life seems really good at that time. Then you hear a knock at the door, and there's a man with a note for you at the door that says he's about to foreclose on your home, and that you didn't know anything about it because your husband's been hiding the fact that he hasn't paid the mortgage payment for 14 months. Okay, and you had no idea of this because you trusted him so completely. Meanwhile, that same husband has gone to Alaska saying that he's going to take a job there, leaving you there at the house alone to receive this foreclosure notice. Imagine also that very soon after, your car is repossessed. So now you have no car, no home, and you're left with no money for living expenses or for taking care of your children. Well, that was my life living with a compulsive gambler. I was forced to take my children out of private school they had been in for years. I was paying about $1,000 a month at that time for private school, and we just couldn't afford it any longer. All the while, he seemed oblivious to the problem. I can remember having to move out of one house and into another, and all my friends were helping me to move, and he was standing out in the driveway making jokes with people, and they were just ready to strangle him. You know, they just had had enough. I remember one time I wanted to go buy a pair of tennis shoes for $20, but I was afraid to go buy those because I knew he had already gambled about $60,000 and we didn't have any money. When I came into the program of Gammonon, there was a lot that I learned. I was really at the bottom, and I remember that one of the meetings we went to was a family meeting, and I remember my daughter, she was about in fourth grade at that time, and she was just shocked when she saw the people at the meeting. She said, "All these people are going through this?" She said, "I thought we were the only ones." You know? And so that really helped our family to realize we're not alone. We have help here. One of the big things that Gammonon did for us was, as Roger talked about, the pressure relief meeting. At the pressure relief meeting, they taught us how to develop a budget, what things we needed to pay first, and what things that needed to wait. And one thing I also learned was that family budget and finances came first, that all the gambling would have to wait. And I don't think he was too happy about that at that time. Another thing was that I realized that I didn't have control over the gambling. It wasn't my fault, and I wasn't responsible for it. And that was one of the most freeing things for me, because I had grown up in a family where I somehow became the fix-it person. And so that was just a natural role for me to step into, to fix everything. And I was constantly trying to make sure everything was right and the kids were happy and nothing ever went wrong. And when all of that spiraled out of control, I had no control over it. There was nothing I could do. But when I realized that wasn't my place to have to do that, I think I slept so much better after that. I was not exhausted anymore. Some of the things I learned in the program were about the games that the gamblers and we play. And one of the games was the guilt and the blame game. And I realized that a lot of times when he would try to put guilt on me, blame me for things, get into arguments with me, it was really because he was trying to go gamble and he needed a way out. So, you know, after I saw that and understood it, then it was a tool for me to use to know not to get dragged into that. Another one was a game that had a lot to do with me, and that was the merry-go-round named Denial. And I realized at that point where my responsibility was. For many years, I allowed him to take control of all the finances, to be responsible for everything, and I didn't do it myself, and I didn't check up on anything. And so I have to take some responsibility that I need to be aware of what goes on with my finances and be involved with that. I had to grow up and take responsibility. Another thing I learned was that gambling addiction was not anything about love, but it was an illness, because that was the thing we felt like, he doesn't love us. How could you love a person and treat him this way, you know? But we realized that it was an illness and that was his responsibility to take care of his illness. I learned the serenity prayer in the program, and that was something that really helped me, that I would just pray that all the time, and it would just give me peace, and I could just, you know, not have to worry all the time. I could just pray that, and I would get peace. The 12 steps really helped me become a healthy and a whole person, because I could go through each step, and I realized, you know, that God is in control. I'm not in control. I don't have to do this whole thing alone. I could go to meetings. I could have people that understood and that would stand by me. And then when there's a problem, they would be there to support me. And that was a very important thing to me. At that time, also, I started to finally develop some self-esteem, which I did not have before that. And I learned that I could be happy, and I had the right to be happy and to do things that would make me a better person, and not just be doing whatever was to take care of everyone else. So at that time, I went back to school and I earned a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in education, and I have my teaching certificate now. One of the most important things that I learned, I think, through the program was to communicate with the gambler. Rather than belittling and shaming him, I learned to be more accepting of his feelings and understanding, but to draw boundaries that would protect myself and to make me a healthier person. I think one of the most important things also that I've learned was to have gratitude. For a long time, I didn't have gratitude. I was very angry, and especially I was angry at him because he would say, it could always be worse. You know, it could be worse. There's other people that have worse. And I was dying, and I'm thinking, no, it's not going to be worse. I don't want it to be worse. But today, I've learned through the program to be grateful, to have gratitude for everything that I have. And today, my life is good with Gammon on it. So thank you for listening to me.
So my closing thoughts to all of you today is that to the clinicians, having your client attend Gamblers Anonymous is just another effective tool that one has to increase the chance that that client is going to stay in recovery. If it's not the client and or the client's family members, if they're having difficulty accepting what's going on, then if you have Gammon on in your area, I would highly recommend that you try to get that spouse or that child or that relative or that friend into a meeting where there is Gammon on as well, because those recovery steps will aid them in getting through their recovery. And I know that in a lot of areas there's a lot of rift between the counseling world and the GA world. I spoke once at a mini conference in Louisiana, and I mentioned the fact that I was going to be a therapist. And after I spoke, this one young man came up to me and said, "So, you're going to be one of those counselors, huh?" And I said, "Yes, sir. That's my plan." Well, I could never see giving somebody some help and having to charge money for it. And so there's people sometimes in GA that look at the therapist and the counselor says, "Oh, those are those evil people. You know, they're going to charge you money to get help." And then when we as therapists, we try to go to Gamblers Anonymous and say, "Hey, I'd like to establish some dialogue here because we need to help each other." And I think if you're able to find someone that has an ear and that will listen to you, allow that person then to be the spokesman to go back to the group and solidify that relationship. Eric Groh in Georgia has done an excellent job of going to the Atlanta Inner Group and saying to them, "Guys, we need to work together. I'm going to be sending clients to you." And, you know, once in a while, if you've got somebody at the meeting that is just really struggling, you know, you might, after the meeting, have the wisdom to say, "Listen, I know a therapist here in the area. It might help you a little bit to just go that extra mile and get a different perspective on things." Both can be great tools for recovery. And so I would just encourage you to recognize Gamblers Anonymous, Gammon On, they are recovery tools that are invaluable for you. Before you leave today, I have some copies of the Gamblers Anonymous combo book. If you've never read it or were familiar with it, you're welcome to take that with you. Also, courtesy of the Porch Band of Creek Indians in Alabama, I have some free copies over there of my story, "The Dishes Under the Sink in the Garbage Bag." You're more than welcome to take one. And if you'd like extra copies, all you got to do is email me at RogerOlson2016@hushmail.com. And there is my personal information up there if you want to jot it down. Do I have time for a couple quick questions? Yes, go ahead, ma'am.
I have a question. I have I'm really formal client.
Mm-hmm.
He was on step four, was really involved in meeting with a sponsor. I had him working on his irrational beliefs, core beliefs, and his sponsor actually took all of his information from the fourth step and called his wife.
Oh.
And completely blew his confidentiality right out of the water. So now he's really struggling. I haven't been back to work. I've been out. I go back on Monday, but I've been kept in the loop.
Yes.
And I'm really concerned for him, and I'm not exactly sure how to help him work through this.
You know, it's a real tragedy when somebody is in the program and then refuses to work the program. And this happens in all aspects of our lives.
Well, this is his sponsor.
And the, right, exactly, his sponsor. That would be the same thing as if somebody came to me as the pastor of the church and in confidence said something to me, and then I turned around and I told the family member, okay?
I mean, it's gotten to the point where his wife is still letting him speak to his daughter, which he just established a relationship with her after years of not knowing where they were located.
Yes.
And him and his wife were rebuilding their relationship, and that's completely blown out of the water now. So I just really don't know. I'm going to obviously continue to encourage him to go to the meetings because he still has support from what I'm being told when he goes. And I think they're having some type of informal proceeding within the rooms of whether or not they're going to allow this individual to continue attending the meetings or not. So he has support. I guess I'm just asking, as someone who attends meetings and works programs, do you have any suggestions on how I can help move him through this, help keep him encouraged and
absolutely
not give up on this experience?
Renee, do you have a comment on that?
I have a couple comments. First thing I would do
how do we make it a learning experience? How do we make it something to build?
Absolutely. Yeah. How do we take something that's been so bad, but now we're going to turn it into something that could be so, so good?
Okay.
But that's a tough one, I agree.
I mean, it's moving from step four to step six real quickly. You're identifying the things you did wrong.
Yeah.
And sharing it. It's step five. You're sharing it now with somebody he didn't intend to share.
Right. And then my next question.
Making amends.
Right. My next question is, if he is now resistant to seeking a sponsor because of this, he has significant trust issues. Would it be inappropriate for me to help him work through the steps as his counselor? I don't know how. No, because I've worked with him for over a year, so I know the trust is there.
Yes, there are some.
That's not for everyone.
I just know some sponsors have said I'd rather you work with me versus.
It takes a long time to build up trust with anyone else.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you had to with you already, why not?
Okay.
Sure.
It's important not to work on.
You already have this situation. Yeah, has the chaotic situation now this past. So right, I mean, I wouldn't for the very first. Somebody says, oh, no, I'd rather have you as a sponsor. No, that's not.
And I know, like, male, female, they say.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And female, too, that you're not a sponsor.
Right.
Yeah.
And that you know the steps of the steps, so there are steps for everyone, and that you want them to understand them.
You can help them. You're helping with the
counsel,
but not
the counsel. And right. There are treatments that are based on the 12 steps anyway.
Yeah. and that ethically and legally you do have to abide by confidentiality.
Right.
Comment in the back, and then I got to let you go.
Yeah, there's actually a manual you can get online, the 12-step facilitation manual, and in the outpatient program that I was working in, I would say to the clients, yeah, I'd be happy to work with you as a therapist using this manual. It's just a facilitation, but you really need to establish relationships with
yeah.
Yep.
So that's really helpful. Blow by blow, how not to be a sponsor, but be a step
right.
facilitator.
So we just want to thank you, Roger, so much from the New York Council on Common Giving for your valuable participation in the conference.
My pleasure. Thank you. God bless you. And you're free to go.
And I'll take your evaluation tomorrow.